You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas, alongside Ben Folks. We're both senior writers in MMA for The Athletic, and we meet here every single week to chop up all the prominent, newsworthy, and hilarious happenings in the world of mixed martial arts. Ben, a programming note for this week.
Okay.
Now, this basically only pertains to patrons of the Co-Main Event Podcast, but we do love them all very much, so we thought we would leave the show with it. You are off to Minneapolis.
That's right.
This week for UFC on ESPN 3. Is it 3?
I don't know.
Number 3 this time around?
Ngannou versus Dos Santos.
That's what it is. You're off to Minneapolis for that. So we will not have a CME Patreon video chat on Wednesday because you'll be en route.
Correct.
But we do think we're going to circle back Friday and we're going to try to do a CME Patreon Power Hour via Skype.
Yeah, we ought to be able to swing that.
Now, are you going to be doing that from a hotel room? Are you going to be using the hotel Wi-Fi for that?
Yes.
Well, I can't wait to see how this goes.
Do you have any better ideas?
No. You could go find a workspace. You could try to find a
workspace where I'm just going to talk into a microphone for an hour. God, I hate me just thinking about that.
A private room at the library?
Okay.
Just right off the top of my head?
Yeah, that'll give me the opportunity to roll into a public library in Minneapolis and be like, listen, I'm a very important podcaster. Give me a private room. I'm not disturbed.
I don't want us to write checks that the hotel internet stream can't cash. All I'm saying.
We're going to do our best. That's all anyone can ask of us here.
Are you going to be around on Thursday for the textual chat over at The Athletic?
I plan to, yes.
Okay, so that's still on, but no Wednesday live chat this week.
Correct.
And then we'll be back on our bullshit next week.
Right, back on that bullshit. Although, wasn't next week like 4th of July?
Maybe. Oh, yeah.
Something like that. We'll figure it out.
Check back with us.
Also, though, this Wednesday, voting ends for the next installment of the CME Movie Club.
It's a real horse race last time
I
looked.
It really is.
Is it still 51-49?
Last time I checked, it was.
Locke is leading Fast and the Furious 51-49. And you know what? This is all we could ask for in terms of voting for the CME Movie Club. Is a tight race that bitterly divides the co-maniacs into two rival camps, two partisan camps that may never see eye to eye again. That's all we could ask for.
Then we have a week following that to allow us all to heal before we actually all watch the movie and talk about it.
So if you want to get on board for the CME Patreon Movie Club, you know how to do it. You go over to patreon.com/co-main-event. Join at any one of our three tiers and get a bunch of extra content every week, including the Wednesday live chat, including Friday's Patreon Power Hour, which is a full hour of extra co-main event podcast goodness. And then once every 2 weeks, we run the Movie Club, which is in its second week now. Last week, we did Joe versus the Volcano.
Yep.
Turned out to be discussion worthy, if nothing else.
A lot of fun.
Let's say that. We got music again this week from our longtime pal, Ras Jarborg. If you like what you hear from him on this episode, you can go check out more from him at soundcloud.com/STHLMRas. Stockholm Ras. Ras Jarborg. That's our guy. Everything okay over there?
Yeah, I think so.
Three rounds as usual this week in the Co-Main Event Podcast. In round number one, the Korean Zombie can still make us freak, crafting a quick KO of Hinato Moicano. Whether or not there's a lot else happening there is up for debate. And in round number two, Bare Knuckle FC, Paul Malignaggi, Artem Lobov, and the Buyer's Remorse. And in round number three, hope y'all re-upped your heart medication because Francis Ngannou and Junior Dos Santos is this weekend. You're going to be there live.
I am.
Are you excited? Are you hyped to watch these two behemoths throw them bungalows in person?
I'm super hyped.
Man, when you're there, you can really tell when somebody gets hit super hard. And in Ngannou versus Dos Santos, somebody's probably going to get hit real hard.
Yep. Probably. Good chance of that.
All that plus are you fucking kidding me and just saying stuff. But first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
First of all, birthday shout out to somebody called the Golden Snake.
Okay.
From your buddy Silver Shark over on Patreon.
Nice.
Now see, we don't always do shout outs, but when you write me saying you want me to tell your buddy Golden Snake happy birthday... From the Silver Shark? Okay, I'm in.
Frankly, I would be frightened to tell those people no.
The only thing,
like, destroyers of worlds.
The only thing I wonder about is whether or not we just got conned into putting out some kind of code to, like, a terrorist cell using the Co-Main Event podcast as, like, the instigator.
Do you think right now, like, somebody just snapped into, like, a hypnotized state and they're going to get up and assassinate a prime minister somewhere?
More Manchurian candidate shit. Golden Snake, happy birthday from your buddy Silver Shark.
You're just going to keep repeating it now that you know the stakes?
Well, maybe I'll snap out of it if I say more than once.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
That's what jogs him out of it.
That checks out.
First question this week comes to us from Ross from Ohio. He writes, Ryzen and Bellator are having cross-promotional champ-champ fights. The UFC cuts winners of its reality show who aren't aggressive enough for their tastes. Dana White is actively turning away talent for trying to do things that win fights. Can we finally admit that the UFC is not trying to find the best at each weight class, but the most entertaining? Second question, can they? Well, yeah, obviously they can. They've got all the best, many of the best, most entertaining fighters in the world. Basically, at this point, you know, as much as we criticize the UFC for its roster and its matchmaking and maybe putting too many events out there, it essentially has its pick of mixed martial artists in the world. So I think the answer to the second question is pretty easy. But this brings up a couple of interesting points, Ben, that we talked about a lot last week, but I don't know if we addressed them here on the CME proper. You had that kid, Brendan Lochnane, didn't get a contract on the Dana White Contender Series, even though he fought his ass off.
Went for a takedown with 10 seconds left, and that's apparently all it takes.
That's all it takes. So, I'm not totally sure about the connection between these two things, but...
Well, I understand, especially pointing out all these other promotions are thinking outside the box a little bit to try to get attention, and the UFC is over here being like, no, didn't like that one takedown attempt. Screw it. This guy's out.
Does it seem to you like Dana White and, by extension, the UFC are retreating further into their essential Dana White / UFC-ness over the last, like, month or so? It seems like there's been a spike where he's been like, he decided to turn it up to 11 or something.
Yeah, it does feel that way. I mean, maybe he goes through waves with that stuff.
Yeah.
It seems like Dana White is, as we know, sometimes kind of a stubborn individual. And when he gets it in his head that this is the way to do it or that this is the decision he's making, the more people question him on the decision, the more he doubles down on it and insists that his way is right and that he's never wrong and he never needs to rethink any of these decisions. And so when you were so dependent on basically the whims of one man, it does create these opportunities for other people to be like, okay, he's sometimes just going to screw up because he's a human being and he won't be able to admit it, and then we can capitalize on it. So I kind of see what Ross from Ohio is getting at here, especially because the UFC is really making these kind of decisions like on a snap judgment based on, 10 seconds left, he went for a takedown. It's a pass for me. And not thinking about, you know, maybe you could do some real business here, and you already kind of promoted this guy, whether you meant to or not. You just made him into kind of a thing. Now people have a reason to care about where he fights next and where he ends up. You might be serving it up for some of your competitors to some extent.
Yeah, depending on the structure of those Dana White Contender Series contracts.
Right, well, I mean, even if there's like a 6-month non-compete or something, you know, 6 months, people will still remember that. If he shows up in Bellator 6 months from now and people are like, oh yeah, hey, it's the guy who everybody thought was an awesome fighter, but who Dana White passed on for reasons that most people found frankly absurd, I think people would remember that and be like, okay, let's see what this guy does.
Yeah, and you can see how a personality like Dana White, who I agree is stubborn, would take the last 15 years of growth of the UFC and see that as a mandate, right? That like he's stubborn enough. I think he's like narrowly focused enough that he would look at this the really incredible growth of the UFC over the last decade and a half and be like, this means that I am right.
Right.
Everything that I have done has worked out, and so I'm just going to keep doing my thing, and can't nobody tell me nothing,
right?
Essentially. But I also agree that the further that he retreats into that and the more kind of single-minded the UFC becomes in its Dana White-edness, that it does give an opportunity for other people to just not have Godsmack play at an event, right? Maybe take it in a different direction if you're like, Scotty Cokes.
Let's think about musical groups that might have been popular in the last 5 years, for instance.
Yeah, and let me say additionally, like, so Dana White also sent out that like personal Twitter video following Daron Wynn and Eric Spicely the curtain jerker on this UFC on ESPN Plus
event. He sent out a
Video, like a Twitter video that was like, "That's how you start a show, boys. Like, great fight." So like the opposite of what he did to Brendan Lochmaine, essentially.
Okay.
Which is fine. Like, it's prerogative to do that. And like, I'm sure that those two fighters appreciated it and they did go out there and put on a slobber knocker. So more power to them. But at the same time, when I see that kind of stuff, especially right on the heels of the Contender Series thing, I find myself feeling like, man, I just don't want the promoter weighing in on what kind of fights we should have.
Yeah.
Even though the UFC has done that, you know, for its entire history, really, incentivized one kind of fight over another and even like, you know, financially incentivized it back when, well, they still do, but back they used to literally call it submission of the night and knockout of the night. Now we have performance of the night, which is a little bit of a, maybe a rhetorical smokescreen there, yes, so to speak. But they certainly have incentivized one kind of a fight over another kind of fight. But when I'm like, I'm into mixed martial arts for the mixed part of it. Like, I like to see people bring their disparate styles to the cage and we find out who's the best. I don't just want the dominant brand of mixed martial arts to turn into 15-minute slugfests all the time.
Right. Well, it is true, though, that the ship has kind of sailed on we're trying to find out who the best is. That's advertising copy now. You know, it's a marketing ploy, but it's not necessarily something that the UFC is as committed to doing in real life. Just look at the fact that you let Demetrius Johnson go, for one thing. Like, yeah. That kind of tells you that you decided you could have run that one back to try to figure out who the best is, but you're like, this guy never really sold, so we're not too sad to see him lose the title, and we could move on and try with somebody else. Stuff like that tells you what we're actually doing here. So, I don't. It's very clear now that the UFC is an entertainment property. That it's a, you know, sports is the like the form that the entertainment takes. But it really thinks of itself as an entertainment company and not just like we're out here for the purity of the sport. Yeah. Nobody's kidding themselves about that at the UFC offices, I'm sure.
Next question this week comes to us from Josh Montgomery, who got to us on Patreon. He's like, so the UFC is taking their women's flyweight title fight down to Uruguay. Besides wondering how many PPV points they are giving Shevchenko for that title defense, I got other thoughts on women's MMA. Outside of strawweight, there seems to be very little...
Oh, nice.
Competitiveness for the belts. There is always
little competitiveness. My rap name, by the way.
Yes, very little competitiveness.
How dare you.
There is always talk of weight cutting issues, the 165 for men and whatnot. I cannot help wonder if women's MMA would not benefit from a total weight class reorganization.
Oh boy,
I don't know if it is rule of law that classes need to be on the fives or if men/women weight classes need to be the same. But I see it like this: take the four divisions and reorganize. Like, this is a lot. There's a fucking shitload of abbreviations in this.
Well, it's a long email, so you gotta abbreviate so it just fits in the whole screen.
Take the four divisions and reorg like this: 113, 121, 129, 138, and then maybe in the future of fighting a 155 max heavyweight division. I really think it would balance out the ladies by their more natural sizes, and the way they fell in divisions would be more competitive. Thoughts?
Okay. Rather than examining this idea on its merits, which I don't think it's a terrible idea necessarily.
Sure.
But nobody's doing this. Nobody is doing any kind of broad weight class reorganization. Look at the UFC's resistance to the 165, for example.
Yeah.
Now, if you come to Dana White and be like, okay, here's also a thing you should do. Change all the women's weight classes. Just, they're not going to do it. There's nobody is willing to undertake that kind of a change right now. I see the core point that you're making right now. It does seem like, you know, at some of the women's weight classes, like you got Chevy Chanks out there and we just saw her in something that kind of ended up looking like a mismatch. And now everybody's like, she's scary for absolutely anybody out there at that weight class. We don't really know what to do with her. And we don't want to put somebody in there to just get hurt for no good reason. But I don't know if you change anything at its core level by just changing up the weight class numbers a little bit here.
Yeah, I think I would need to know more about how everybody would fall into these five new weight classes before I gave it a thumbs up or thumbs down. But I do agree with you that, like, you're basically asking for like a complete reimagining of everything that the sport does with, you know, essentially half of its fighters. That's an incredibly huge undertaking. So it might be a really good idea, and maybe it would be something that people would think about in the future of fighting, but like probably not right now. Probably, as you said, you know, when you indicate that the UFC is now has turned the page in a lot of ways and has moved on from being just a fight promoter and probably thinks of itself as like a content provider, yes, and an entertainment brand, they got bigger things, or what they think of as bigger things, on the docket rather than scrambling up all the fighters. It's the same thing with, like, as you said, the 165.
Yeah.
You add the 165, then you got to probably move welterweight to 175. Then you got to...
But then that's then it. That's all you have to do.
Like, yeah, but that's still... Only two things that would still do. Be like... Pretty a pretty big deal.
But if that one's totally doable, and Dana White refuses to even consider it and gets madder and madder when people keep suggesting it. So, like, now think about all this other stuff you're asking to do that's even more onerous. Also, I like that you were willing to imagine a world in which the future of fighting thing was actually about making the sport better, or like changes to the sport that will mean something to the fighters and the fans, mm-hmm, and that might actually produce better stuff in the cage, because that is not where we decided to go with that.
Some young, hot, up-and-coming fighter needs to jump on the future of fighting as their nickname. Frank, the future of fighting, Fredrickson.
And we've seen how those kind of nicknames go, though.
Yeah, I mean, when you're 40 and you're in Bare Knuckle FC,
yeah,
and your nickname, uh-huh, is still the future of fighting.
Exactly.
But you might have to change it at that point. Go with the War Master.
You got kind of a Wonder Boy problem at that point.
Next question this week comes to us from Rob Walden, who writes another long... Who chose these long emails?
Look in the mirror.
Yeah,
look at the man in the mirror on that one.
I chose him. From Rob Walden, he writes, "So I woke up Saturday morning expecting to watch Rafael Lovato and Gegard Mousasi fight for the Bellator middleweight title that evening on Paramount Network, only to see a bunch of tweets bouncing around MMA Twitter saying the fight was only on the Bellator app. That seemed pretty ridiculous to me, but I thought if I tuned into the actual TV broadcast, they'd show a replay or at least highlights of the fight, probably in the first segment of the show. But no, Goldberg, Big John, and the crew started hyping the fights that were on TV like nothing had happened. 2.5 hours into the broadcast, I still don't believe they've mentioned the middleweight title fight at all. Just why? Everything about this is weird to me. Why is a major title fight that occurs at a televised show only streaming on the Bellator app, not even DAZN? Why is the main event of the card some throwaway Paul Daly fight and not a championship match? Why can't the title fight be shown or even mentioned on the TV broadcast? This whole thing was taped delayed anyway. It was like something from the Twilight Zone, and oh yeah, seems like a terrible business decision. Please discuss."
Yeah.
This was weird. And
yeah,
frankly, I didn't even know that this was what Bellator was doing with what was essentially a split event, where half of it was dubbed Bellator London and half of it was dubbed Bellator 223.
It's just in the same place, though,
if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I agree with this. They went, I don't know if this was a thing where they're trying to like launch or popularize this Bellator app that has seemingly appeared out of nowhere that I didn't even know existed prior to Saturday night. But as much as we've been talking about Bellator over the last 3-4 weeks, and frankly, they've deserved it. They've put on some great shows. They've made a lot of waves. They seem to be doing a good job with their roster. They seem to be, you know, occasionally going head-to-head with the UFC and offering a competitive product. This is the kind of shit where you look at it and you say, you shake your head and you say, classic Bellator.
Yeah.
Classic Bellator, man. You got what actually turns out to be a competitive and surprising middleweight title fight, because spoiler alert, Lovato unseats Gegard Mousasi and wins the 185-pound title. And no one can watch it. No one can figure out where the fuck it even is. Man, come on. Come on, Bellator.
Yeah. This one, I do not get it. Because you're still trying to make DAZN a thing. Like, that is still fairly new for us, right? Be like, okay, our big fights are on DAZN now. You got to sign up for DAZN. And we're going, okay, shit, fine. I guess we have to.
At least that you're getting money for, yeah, though, right?
If we have to, we have to. We'll kind of reorganize our thinking around this, and we will like stumble over in this direction of this new streaming service. And we get there, and now you're like, no, no, now it's over here, the Bellator app. What? Bellator app? What are you trying to do to us here? Plus, you do this on the weekend where there's a ton of other combat sports stuff going on. You got UFC has an event in South Carolina. Bare Knuckle FC has the biggest bare knuckle fight since fucking John L. Sullivan down there in Florida. And then you want to throw this thing at us where We can't even really figure out what time it's on, where it is. The fights happen, and they kind of don't even really let us know that some of these other fights have happened. This would be a bad idea if you had the weekend all to yourself. It'd still be like a hard thing for people to get their heads around and to understand and to be where they needed to be at the right time. And to do it then on this weekend, it's like you just had a big change in one of your more competitive divisions, and it's like you're trying not to let us find out.
Yeah. And again, like, this weekend might well have represented a good chance for Bellator. You know, even though the weekend was jam-packed with, like, 100,000 fights, like, when you look at the UFC Greenville card and you think, well, you know, Korean Zombie versus Moicano is going to be fun, but John Lineker had to drop out of his fight, and I'm not sure how much, like, real meaningful stakes there are in this card. And then you might think to yourself, and I'm not shelling out to buy Bare Knuckle FC, I guess that means I'll watch Bellator. They have a pretty good card. You know, Paula Daly obviously is on it, and then the middleweight title fight. A good opportunity for Bellator to be like, hey guys, we're over here offering you a title fight. And no one can even figure out how to find it. Like, they bait and switched us.
It's what we were saying before about how the plan for Bellator to be, don't make any big dumb moves. Wait for the UFC to slip up little by little, and then you just improve a little bit. And then stuff like this, and you're like, oh, that was a big dumb move.
Yeah,
you fell back a little bit.
Like, I would honestly like to hear from Bellator about it, because it seems so nonsensical that it almost makes me wonder, like, maybe there was a rights issue of some kind that we don't know about. Maybe there was, you know, they were in England, obviously, for this fight card, so maybe there was just something where they literally couldn't put it on Paramount or DAZN. I don't know what that would be, but I can't for the life of me figure out why you would do it this way.
Do you know the shit was on DAZN? I mean, I don't know.
Maybe Gegard Mousasi has a no DAZN policy.
He's got a clause in his contract.
Yeah, he takes off his shirt and he's just got a giant no DAZN tattoo on his back.
And they were like, well, shit.
Yeah, really, we're going to have to go Bellator app.
He forced our hand. We'll have to direct people to this entire app just to avoid Gegard Mousasi's tattoo.
But essentially, you go from like having this really good opportunity if you're Bellator to just making everyone feel more tired.
Yeah.
Like, if you thought, holy shit, this is too many fights this weekend, and I'm not sure what any of them means, and then you find out about the Bellator app,
yes,
you're probably just like, I'm out.
Fuck it. Fuck it.
Going out into the outside world.
Yeah,
maybe walk my dog.
I'm going to go for a long walk on the beach.
Next question comes to us from Alex Pacey, who writes, incredibly nice of the UFC, after 4.5 years away, to give Matt Wyman the old ease yourself back in fight. Man, talk about two fighters who look like they're in different weight classes. And Pena could have climbed a stepladder and still hit Wyman lying on the floor. Admittedly, Wyman didn't help his cause by employing, I hope he gets bored hitting my face when I go for another leg lock attack. Still, in a world where ex-NFL sociopaths get tomato cans to kick around, is it too much to ask to help Wyman come back? This was like, this is your fight promoter 101 handbook right here. Older guy that everyone knows out there against violent Bob Ross, who might be a guy you can do something with in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much what that was. We've seen a couple times where somebody has come back after years away, and I don't know that it ever goes super well. It's a tough thing to do. Just even if you got a advantageous booking, it's a tough thing after that many years away. You know, you lose your timing, you lose a lot of that stuff. I've talked to guys who have tried to do that. I remember talking to Mike Swick when he came back, and I don't know if it was 4.5 years, but it was something pretty close to that, where he came back and he was just like, yeah, it's tougher than I thought it would be to jump right back in there after so many years away from it.
Did we ever get to the bottom of what kept Matt Wyman away? I know he had a back injury at some point, but has there been any comments out there about 4.5 years? That's a long damn time. Either he had a lot of injury delays, or something else was going on in his life, or like he was, you know, focusing on his real estate business or something like that. But like, that's a long damn time, man, to take off from the sport.
What did you make of? Somebody asked about this in my new, by the way, MMA mailbag on The Athletic, and somebody pointed this out, and I noticed it too. He gets that cut early on in the fight, right? He takes like a knee, and it's a hard knee and a bad cut, like over his left eye. And they pause to have the doctor take a look at it, and the doctor just immediately was like, he's fine. Like, didn't even really.
Doctor had some money on the.
Didn't even really come in and take a good look at it, and you could even hear the ref be like, really? Like. That was really quick.
Doctor had a hot beef sandwich at cage side. He was worried it was going to get get cold.
He just poured milk on his cereal.
Yeah. I can't get, my cornflakes are going to get all soggy, man. Yeah, you know how they get? He's fine. Send him back out there.
Yeah. It's just like, really? Because that is a bad cut. It's right over his eye. There's a lot of things there that might be worth examining. Just like, nope. It's cool.
Greenville. Yeah. Cage side doctors out there in Greenville. Bloodthirsty motherfucker. That's what I heard. Last question this week comes to us from Dana Black.
Okay.
See what he did there?
Yeah, I get it.
I'm looking at the fight card this weekend, and lo and behold, we have a flyweight fight in the co-main event. Is this a good sign for the future of the flyweight division? And will the winner ever get a chance to fight Henry Cejudo? Please deliberate. Ben, he's got a point. Co-main event of UFC on ESPN3. Jussie Formiga versus Joseph Benavidez. Flyweight fight.
Yeah.
I mean, this might as well be for the interim title, right?
Since, that's what we were talking about before, yeah, with Henry Cejudo out.
He just had shoulder surgery that's probably going to keep him out the rest of the year. So the champ won't be back for a while. Maybe give the rest of the flyweights a little shot in the arm here, a little vote of confidence by putting the interim title on whoever wins this one.
I don't know. Can you just do that, though?
Retroactively? You can do whatever you want. You can whatever you want.
Sure, you can.
Show up with a belt, and you think... Joe Benavidez, if he wins this, is going to be like, no, you didn't tell me this was for a title, so I must decline.
Yeah, and then if you do decide to have an interim title fight after this, it's kind of, you already matched these two guys up against each other, so then what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, you can always just promote someone to interim champion, right? Like,
I guess. That'd be super weird, though, wouldn't it?
It'd be a little bit weird, but they basically did it for Jose Aldo. Remember that? When
Conor McGregor...
Well, no, well, yeah, like when they, Edgar, right? When they absorbed the WEC, brought Jose Aldo in there in a black tie, like it was a black tie affair. And they were like, this is the champ, featherweight champ. They tried to do it with Ronda Rousey.
But he was already the champion in another organization. That one made more sense. It's not just like promoting. You're just basically changing the letters on the belt, which everybody already saw it that way anyway. I did that story like last week talking to some of the flyweights about, basically, what do you think? Did Henry Cejudo's win make you more confident? And everybody, it was just kind of like, well, yeah, maybe. And Dana White says it's sticking around, so I guess that's better than him saying it's not sticking around. But also, nobody was exactly building a future on those promises. Yeah. They kind of know that could change. I don't know. I would think it would be a really sweet move if these guys went out there and had themselves a crackerjack of a fight.
It would be.
That would be very helpful. Right at this moment, to go out there on ESPN in the co-main event and have yourself just a kick-ass fight, that'd help everybody's chances, I think.
Yeah, maybe give gifts out to all the fans. Yeah. This is from the flyweights.
Mm-hmm. Throw out candy into the crowd.
That's right. That's how you turn them right mm-hmm. there. Then suddenly everybody loves the flyweights.
Like, man, I like these flyweights.
Then you can't get rid of them.
Or you do like the George Costanza thing. Come up with a little like jingle for yourself that you shout out, and you just get some people's heads. I'm like, oh yeah. I don't know why.
You know what they should try? They should say, don't fear me. And then you wait for the crowd to say, fear the consequences. Yeah,
that's a can't miss strategy.
That's going to do it for listener mail this week. If you have a question, comment, or concern that you want to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. You go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. While you're there, sign up for the Breakfast of Champions newsletter. That comes out every Friday morning to catch you up on the news and notes that we miss on all the days that we're not recording the podcast. Stuff always happens, news always breaks. The newsletter itself is short, it's informative, and we would love to tell you it's funny. And the best news is, if you don't like it, it's really easy to unsubscribe. As for right now, though, we are going to go ahead and get started with round number one. Ben, Chan Sung Jung, the Korean Zombie, just straight up crushed Hanato Moicano in the main event of UFC on ESPN Plus 12 over the weekend in Greenville, South Carolina. 58-second TKO. This thing was impressive, doubly impressive when you see it in slow motion. Did you see this? The way Chan Sung Jung, I think it's a right hand, he catches him with the right, and Moicano starts to drop. And Jung just crushes him with the left while he's on his way down.
Yeah.
And when you watch it in slow motion, you can see the Korean Zombie like recalibrate and re-aim that second punch where he sees him going down and he still blasts him.
That's super impressive.
Into the land of wind and ghosts.
That's going to be hard to do. I imagine that's going to be a difficult feat to pull off.
Indeed.
As everything's moving rather
the
fast.
The brain is doing algebra and geometry at a breathtaking rate.
And you know who absolutely fucking loves it is the crowd in Greenville, South Carolina.
Big TKZ fans out there in South Carolina.
Who knew?
I don't know, man.
You know, I did not expect that many people in the state of South Carolina were like, I'm fucking jacked about seeing the Korean Zombie.
Yeah.
And yet, I mean, he does have a lot going. For one thing, he still has like some like holdover branding from back when that stuff was allowed, you know, or like more visible, like where he got a good nickname, he had like good logo kind of stuff going on, and so that helps you. And then you come out there to Zombie.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a 1 + 2 = 3.
It's still
right there.
It's of the people still in the sport, it's one of the best like signature walkouts in the sport, because you hear it like just the opening like crushing guitar grunge sound from the 90s, and you're like, oh yeah, here we go, the Zombie's coming out. Like one of those things where you immediately associate it with the fighter. And like you could be a pro wrestler with that, like be like, oh no, that's the Korean Zombie's music.
Yep, here he comes.
Yeah.
So we were talking about how this main event featured two fighters coming off a loss. Chan Sung Jung most recently off that elbow KO by Yair Rodriguez in November 2018. After this win, though, Ben, he improves to 5-2 in his last 7, and perhaps more importantly for the current state of the modern UFC and the things that we know that they are incentivizing, the last time the Korean Zombie went the distance? April 24th, 2010.
Wow.
A split decision loss to Leonard Garcia.
And that was a kind of a crackerjack, too.
At WEC 48. Now, of course, he's had some delays in the MMA career since then, so you got to take it with a little bit of grain of salt, but still, that's a long-ass time. The Korean Zombie has been out here putting it on the line, either finishing people or getting finished. He was a ways down in the UFC featherweight rankings previous to this fight, so I don't think he's like knocking on the door immediately for a title shot. There's also other stuff going on in the championship picture, but I feel like there was a sense of relief and happiness in the MMA sphere just knowing that Chan Sung Jung is still viable, can still go out there and do some violent things, and is still a guy that we can look forward to having around on a routine basis.
Yeah, it's nice to have him back. Plus, don't act like you couldn't imagine a scenario where old man Edgar has to pull out of a fight. Alex Volkanovski is unavailable because he is dealing with the residual effects of blood poisoning, yep, whatever the hell it was. And they go, well, okay, we had to scramble on short notice, but we're going to give you Max Holloway versus the Korean Zombie. I'd be, fuck it, would watch.
Yeah.
Would watch that shit. Plus, you know what really blew my mind? Was going back and looking at the record and realizing this was the Zombie's 7th UFC fight. That's it.
Yeah.
Only 7 UFC. It feels like he's been around forever. And some of that was just because he was one of the few people who really managed to get attention in the WEC, like that WEC pay-per-view event where he had that crackerjack of a fight with Leonard Garcia. Again, the last time he went to the decision. And that was where I think he really got put on the map for a whole lot of people. And then, you know, absorbed into the UFC along with the WEC guys back at like the start of 2011. And really, you know, had a nice strength. Beat goddamn Dustin Poirier. Choked Dustin Poirier to sleep with a Darce choke. And yet it feels like he's been a staple and has fewer than 10 fights in the UFC over, you know, nearly, what, like 9 years? Eight years?
Yeah. Hanato Moicano, he's now lost 2 in a row. Jose Aldo and Chan Sung Jung, he's 2-3 in his last 5. Not too long ago, he was 11-0 when he beat Jeremy Stephens by split decision in April 2017. That's at one of those UFC on Fox events that was headlined by Demetrius Johnson versus Wilson Hayes. But the last 5, obviously, have been more in the loss column than in the win column for Moicano. At this point, I'm starting to get the feeling that at 30 years old, he's going to be one of these dudes that is really, really good, but just not good enough to sort of be the champ or be like one of the 2 or 3 guys that we regard as elite.
It does feel like one of those fighters where he's rocketing up the ranks, beating a lot of people. People are getting excited about where he could go. And then when he takes a step into that next level, that's when the losses start flooding in and you start to go, oh, maybe he's not ready for that just yet.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he fought Brian Ortega, and that was another one of the fights for Brian Ortega where it was looking like he maybe could have lost until he won.
Yeah.
And so but you're going, okay, that's really good competition, and he looked really good right up until he lost in that fight. Then he beats Calvin Cutter, who has since proved to be pretty good. Beat Cubby Sampson. That's no easy thing to do. And then two losses in a row to Jose Aldo and Shan Tsung Jung, and you're like, oh, wow, okay. This sport can knock you off your pedestal pretty quickly.
Yeah, it sure can. I wanted to talk about the overall place of this UFC Greenville fight card, not only in the UFC's menu of live programming, but in like the MMA world in general, the combat sports world, let's say, because this was a jam-packed weekend for fight fans.
It was.
You had this UFC on ESPN Plus event. You had Bare Knuckle FC, which we talked about on Friday as kind of like really having taken over the pole position for hype over the weekend with Artem Lobov against Paul Malignaggi. And then, of course, you had Bellator serving up a buffet-style event on several different platforms from London.
Except part of the buffet is being held in a back room and you didn't even know about it.
Yeah, you have to know the password to get back to the prime rib station.
Oh, and by the way, by the time you get there, the prime rib's already been eaten.
So, what do we make of this UFC on ESPN Plus 12 card? UFC is going to do 42 events this year. They're essentially all going to be on ESPN at this point because I think you got 20 ESPN Plus shows. You got 10 on linear ESPN television. And then you got the pay-per-views, which are now exclusively available through ESPN Plus. UFC 238, which was the event right before this, obviously was Henry Cejudo versus Marlon Moraes for the vacant men's bantamweight title. And right after this, you're rolling into Francis Ngannou versus Junior Dos Santos. And then immediately following that, of course, you got UFC 239, which is headlined by John Jones versus Thiago Santos. So you got a string of really good events.
Yes.
Right in a row. Is it wrong to look at Hanato Moicano versus the Korean Zombie and think, well, this is just a sign that what we're doing is just churning out content?
Yeah, and I think that was something people said when this one first got booked, right? Remember, I believe we answered a question. We were like, yeah, really happy to see local favorites Hanato Moicano and Chan Sung-Yung compete. And then it turns out Chan Sung-Yung actually does apparently have a ton of fans in Greenville. But yeah, when you looked at this fight card, and then it lost John Lineker at the last minute after that mysterious cut during the weight cut, which is always an interesting phenomenon. And it was like, man, if there was a card that could really not afford to lose a known guy from it in the days leading up to it, it was this one. Because I know you love you some Brian Barberina, and his fight with Randy Brown was entertaining, but that was probably just in terms of like name value or like name recognition among general MMA fans, probably one of the weakest co-main events that we've seen from the UFC this year, right?
Yeah, and like you said, a guy dropped out, so I don't know. But at the same time, like, this is the kind of card that makes me feel like, despite the fact that we have like three newsworthy events right in a row, you know, the things that you come away with from ESPN on Plus 12 is Chan Sung Jung's really fast TKO of Hanato Moicano. You got that good fight between Deron Winn and Eric Spicely, where Dana White shouted them out on Twitter. And then, of course, you have the 9-second heavyweight KO. And it just makes me, like, the whole thing makes me feel like we're producing a lot of this stuff now for the highlight, for like the Twitter content, for Instagram content, for our archival content.
For the library, basically.
It seems like that's what these events are for. And like, when you have a weekend where you get three MMA/combat sport events on the same night, essentially, it just makes me feel a little weary, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole weekend kind of had that feel, right? Because I sat there and had like three different screens going, a couple browsers open, something on the TV. I'm like, everything was streaming by the end. You know, I got like two different things streaming on the computer, one thing streaming through the TV, and it's like 9 hours basically start to finish. And by the end of it, somebody was asking me like, oh, so what do you think was the best fight of the weekend? I was like, I don't know. I don't know, man. It all kind of melts together for you at that point.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on, Ben. What's your Are You Fucking Kidding Me this week? And then we'll move on to round number two.
Well, Chad, let's talk about Dundasso techniques here for a moment.
Yeah, I think we got the same Are You Fucking Kidding Me here.
Because I don't know if anything in the rules specifically says that you cannot put your toe into another man's anus during a fight.
Uh-huh.
Maybe they feel like it doesn't need to be in the rules because it's implied by just the social contract.
Yep. Yeah. Who would want to do that?
Yeah.
Right?
I'll tell you who'd want to do that. Jorge Canelli. Canel?
Canel? Yeah, Canel.
Canel?
Nailed it?
Yeah, totally nailed it. Everyone saw this one, I think, just because of the, you want to talk about Twitter highlights. This one turned out to be a Twitter highlight because you go out there and you see the opportunity, I guess, where you're like, all right, dude's down. I could try to kick his legs. Could maybe go for that axe kick to the belly that people love to do. Or could just stick that big toe right up his ass.
I mean, come on, man.
Are you fucking kidding me?
And it looked like he meant to do it, too.
Yeah, it totally looked like he meant to do it.
Like flat-footed, straight-ahead kick right in the...
Well, because it's not a hard enough kick to hurt you unless you are using your toe as the projectile to go into the other man's body.
If we had a segment on the show called Come On Man, that's what this would be a good one. Come on, man.
Well, I love the look on the other guy's face and that, like, looking at the ref.
Yeah, he just... What
the fuck?
Come on, man, was what that guy was saying.
Can't do that.
Fucking kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
That's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back.
You're fucking kidding me.
Oh, it's the same one.
Oh, okay.
We had the same one.
All right.
Did I not make that clear? No. You were too excited to get to the butthole.
I was excited.
Missed it when I said we had the same. Are you fucking kidding me?
See, man.
You get that laser focus when it comes to anal kicks.
Yeah. Just, I felt like maybe we were going to get through this entire episode. No one would say butthole, but... You know, that was naive of me, I realized.
From week to week, oh, the places you'll go.
Yes. Yeah.
Unexpected places.
Uh-huh.
We'll be right back. Round number two.
Well, I've never personally experienced this, but I have heard from people who watch pornography on the internet.
Yeah. Rolling straight into this conversation
never,
after our toe in the butthole talk there at the end of round one.
Never checked it out myself. Never, you know, had no interest. But I've heard from some people that sometimes they're on the internet, they're watching pornography, and one interest leads to another. The next thing you know, they're watching some stuff that wasn't necessarily what they planned on watching when they sat down. And then when they're all done and they've done what they came to do, they look at where they have ended up and go, wow, I don't feel great about myself right now in this moment. I wondered if there's a similar thing happening with the bare knuckle stuff. Because as we've noted before on this program, the promise of bare knuckle is one of extremes, basically. Not only is it going to be a more extreme type of fighting, and the action is going to feel more visceral and more, you know, it's bloodier, it's just raw. And then when they give us a fight like this, Paul Malignaggi versus Artem Lobov,
the Magic Man,
where one guy is threatening to piss in the other's toothless mouth, and he's spitting on you, and then the other guy is framing it as he is going to beat you as a favor to all humankind.
Yep.
There's like it does an effective job of building up interest, building up attention. And then when it's over, you do kind of have a moment where you sit back and you go, what have I become? What did I just do?
Yeah. That was a circuitous, like roundabout way to get to the buyer's remorse.
I've heard from people about internet pornography.
See, I would not know because I'm at home watching pornography on VHS cassette tape.
Now that
like
I believe.
Like a red-blooded American.
Everybody who knows this show believes that instantly.
Just done some fast-forwarding.
It's too real.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that there's kind of two issues at hand here. Issue number one, I don't know how mad we can get that Paul Malignaggi and Artem Lobov talked all this junk and then essentially went out there and had a boxing match without gloves.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's just par for the course, maybe. One of the institutional... concerns of bare knuckle boxing. Maybe you're not going to get the bloody, violent throwdown that you thought you were going to get, but that's sports and we got to kind of deal with it on a case by case basis. The thing that where I was like, how many times are we going to fall for this was like how jovial and collegial they were immediately following the fight. It was the old combat sports cliche where these dudes talked it up like they had a fucking blood feud, like they hated each other's guts, and then they're out there high-fiving in between rounds, telling each other, good job, and as soon as it's over, we're embracing in the cage and explaining to each other that it was just business and how we respect each other so much, etc., etc. That's when I was like, how many times are we going to fall for this? Are we going to fall for it literally every time?
Yes. Yeah. Endlessly is the answer. I mean, how many times have we fallen for it already? If we were going to learn, we would have learned by now.
Well, then maybe Paul Malignaggi is right about us, right? Not necessarily for the reasons that he thought, because he certainly didn't have a walkthrough out there against Artem Lobov in this fight. But you know, if you really are good enough at acting like you really hate somebody, we're just like little kids, man. We want to believe. We want to believe in it so bad that maybe we'll even buy fucking BKFC6 live from Tampa, Florida.
But you know, watching BKFC, which I did, I ordered it, paid 40 fucking bucks for it.
God damn it.
Watch.
I hope you get reimbursed.
I know. And I watched it, and you know, they keep going back to backstage where poor Ron Kruk, is back there having to take this super seriously. He's a professional, goddammit. And so when they're like, okay, we need an update from backstage about the guys beefing over hand wraps and then beefing over Vaseline, and Ron Kruk has to stand there and be like, the commission came in, smelled the Vaseline. You know, he has to like do this, and you're like, here is one thing that is entertaining about it, because the UFC at this point is such an established property, and it knows exactly how it's going to do this stuff every single time, that there are not a whole lot of surprises just in like the presentation. Yeah. It's all like clockwork, kind of. It's calcified into the thing that it's going to be.
Which, for all our criticisms, has its benefits.
It really does. But then something like this, where it feels like, oh, we're just out there kind of winging it on a bunch of levels.
Yeah, well, it does have like a retro feel, yeah, right?
It reminds you of those old days of MMA where it was just kind of like, we're figuring it out on the fly, and who knows what could happen, and there's an excitement to that.
Yeah.
And if this feels like it's such a, it's in its primordial state, the way MMA used to feel. And so there is something about that. I don't know if it's like that it makes you nostalgic for that era of MMA, but like you're watching it and you're going like, this is kind of a shit show and I kind of love it.
Yeah, unfortunately that excitement didn't totally extend to the main event fight. Is it a bad idea to just bring straight up professional boxers to this shit? Because it's almost like they're too good. And like, I don't know, we can talk about whether you thought Paulie Malignaggi deserved to win the decision or not.
Only got hit with one clean punch.
Yeah, four cuts on his face. It's the Zapruder film. It's the Warren Commission of punches from Artem Lobov there. But like, as I was watching it, I was like, oh, of course. Like, of course this is how this fight is going to go. Because actual professional boxer Paul Malignaggi is out there jabbing Artem Lobov in his stomach, and then like basically circling around the ring like he was having a boxing match.
Yeah.
So like, is it better to just book Chris Lieben and Dakota Cochran in this thing and not into like, you know, leave the true sweet science out of it? Because I'm not sure that's what the people want.
Well, yeah, because like if you look at that Artem Lobov versus Jason Knight fight, one of the things that made it great and that you could see was going to result in a certain kind of fight was like, okay, two guys not necessarily that concerned with defense are going to go out there and have themselves a bare-knuckle fight. It seems like, yeah, what we're going to end up with is two guys who look like the end of a damn monster movie.
Yeah, and then didn't it seem like maybe Paulie Malignaggi fell victim to his boxing, kind of, by the judge's decision? Because he's out there, like, having, for you know, I don't know, this is probably a stretch, but like having a technical boxing match, essentially, against Artem Lobov. And Artem Lobov is out there throwing them bungalows, and in large part missing, but was still probably more aggressive in the eyes of the judges. Right. Certainly had more noticeable flurries, but like it kind of seemed like Paul Malignaggi, by going out there and just like flicking the jab in Artem Lobov's face, was probably more successful, but at the same time, like did it in a way that was maybe too subtle for what everyone was hoping for from BKFC 6.
Yeah, well, and maybe it's, you take some risks when you do that in a fight that is 5 2-minute rounds.
Yeah. This thing went by in a blur. And see, the whole thing's like 11 minutes long.
That's what I was thinking of when watching the fight, especially because you sell us this big blood feud of a fight. In that instance, They need to do it like the old school bare knuckle way, where we're just going to fight until somebody can't get up off the stool anymore.
Yeah.
Or somebody can't make it to scratch in time. And they're, you know, his corner's in there dousing water on his face and giving him porter to drink in between rounds to revive him. You know, that's the kind of bare knuckle fight I need to see in order to feel like there's been some resolution here.
Speaking of resolution, you can't run this thing back now, right?
No.
Because like leading up to this, we were like, oh, this is like BKFC's dream. You've got this hot blood feud, and like maybe you can do a couple of these things depending on how it goes. Now that you've actually seen it, no one's watching this again, right?
I think what we need now is for Paulie Malignaggi to just kind of disappear for a while.
Yeah, is this the end of Paulie Malignaggi's run, where maybe again, underscoring the point of Paulie Malignaggi, we have kind of given him several years worth of free publicity, essentially because he fell down in a sparring match against Conor McGregor, right?
Okay. Yeah. I guess it just makes me feel like you wore out your welcome a while ago, but we were willing to stick with you because we felt like we actually needed to see something. We needed to find out for ourselves what could actually happen when you get in there. And then you get in there with Artem Lobov, who, let's not forget, his most famous contribution to the online MMA atmosphere is the joke about him being the greatest of all time.
Yeah, and he gets slapped. Like, yes, he's there to get slapped by somebody else.
By other people. And he beats you. Beats you in a bare-knuckle boxing match. And so, at that point, I think we're all done here. I mean, I don't know what bare-knuckle does with any of these people at this point. I think that there is, honestly, kind of a blueprint here for bare knuckle to go out, get other people where it's just like the interest in seeing them do this once will be high enough that it's kind of worth it. I mean, there's several fighters, I think. Like, man, you told me that Roy Jones Jr. was going to have a bare knuckle boxing match. Probably not going to get Roy Jones Jr. But still, something along those lines, you'd be like, or like some guy that played in the NFL for a couple seasons or something, you're going to put him in a bear. Like, that promise is enough for people to be like, okay, I got to see it. I don't know if I'll feel good about myself afterwards. I don't know if I'll get what I came for. But, like, the curiosity of, like, taking this person from outside this world, putting him into this bizarre thing, bizarre and super extreme thing, I do want to see it once.
Yeah, I think that the point that you made several weeks ago is probably the best one, that Bare Knuckle FC seemed like it had been fairly smart in signing known MMA fighters for the most part, who we had an interest in watching compete in bare knuckle boxing, and yet at the same time wouldn't break the bank. And Chris Lieben and Dakota Cochran is probably the most recent and best example of that. That, like, even if we are kind of afraid for the future of maybe both those guys, we want to watch Chris Lieben in the bare knuckle fight, because it seems like, frankly, the sport he's been waiting around to do this whole time. So, like, I think that's the lesson. Like, I come away from seeing Paulie Malignaggi fight being like, this isn't really a great sport for actual technical boxers. Maybe if you get a knockout artist out there, then it's fun. But I don't know if, like, guys actually boxing is what the crowd came to see in a bare knuckle fight.
You feel like maybe the emphasis is on the bare knuckle, not on the boxing.
Yeah. How many Chris Liebens, how many like Jeremy Stevens style dudes, how many of those guys can you get? I think that's your path forward.
You had to put that out in the universe, huh? Jeremy Stevens?
Just that
archetype. You've doomed him now. Like, yes. He has to. You're going to manifest this just by speaking it,
I guess.
Anyone else you want to put that evil on?
No, not really. That's just an example. Let's say an example of the kind of fellow that it might work for.
You know, look at Daron Wynn and be like, there's a guy. There's
a guy. He's just getting started, man. Let's let him have his MMA career before we start having him show up at BKFC. Come on.
Junior Dos Santos?
Speaking of Junior Dos Santos.
Versus some guy who was on an NFL roster for a few years. Bare knuckle boxing.
Would watch. Right?
At a fairgrounds in Georgia. Shit, I'd watch that. God damn it.
That's going to do it for round number two. We'll be right back with round number three. True or false, Francis Ngannou versus Junior Dos Santos should be the most anticipated fight of the summer.
False.
What's more anticipated?
I don't know. There's got to be more. There's got to be a higher stakes fight that's more anticipated.
The only example, the only answers that I would accept are Cormier versus Miocic 2, which I believe is in August. And then you got Poirier versus Nurmagomedov, but that's in September. So I'm going to go ahead and say that's the fall. Other than that, I think you got a real good chance that your high watermark is this weekend in Minneapolis.
It does feel like a banger,
well,
right?
It's definitely going to be a banger.
Well, don't you do that. That's what we thought about Derek Lewis and Francis Ngannou, right?
That's true, but at this point, I think we got a more fully realized Francis Ngannou out there.
Okay.
Back then, he was still trying to shake off the demons
that's
of
right,
the previous fight loss against Stipe Miocic.
Yeah, and these guys felt like we were talking about this before this fight was made, where we were like, man, this one seems like it's crying out for you to give us a hell of a good time by just putting these two guys in the cage together. How can you fuck that up?
It's the main event on ESPN. Can you imagine how mad Dana White is going to be if it's not that kind of fight?
Yeah.
Real mad.
He already seems like he wants to hate Francis Ngannou.
Well, he's gonna be super mad if this isn't a slobber knocker. I don't know that it's Francis Ngannou that could or should turn it into a wrestling match, but this is one where we're all tuning in to see heavy leather.
Do you think there's either one of these guys is out there thinking about that? Because we talked before about Francis Ngannou's kind of sweet move of questioning Junior Dos Santos' black belt, an old school martial arts move we haven't seen in a while, and MMA trash talk.
Yeah, like we're headed for the All Valley Karate Tournament.
Yeah, I'm into that. But we were also like, come on now, is it really going to matter? Is anybody out here thinking about a takedown in this fight? I don't think so. I think Junior Dos Santos probably thinks that he can go out there and just outbox Francis Ngannou, that he'll just be like the better technician in that regard. And I think Francis Ngannou feels like, I don't have to throw a punch with perfect form or even connect super cleanly and I can hurt you.
Yeah. Do you think that that's the best way forward for Junior Dos Santos, though? I mean, the guy is 4-1 in his last five. He's got an impressive streak going right now. He just beat Derek Lewis in March, and now he's back here again in June. And everything that we know about Junior Dos Santos, I agree with you, tells you that he would go out there and try to slug it out with Francis Ngannou. However, need I also remind you of Junior Dos Santos' face?
Yep.
This guy gets hit, and when he gets hit, you can tell.
Face turns into a damn basketball.
If you're one of the coaches of Junior Dos Santos, are you like, Junior, we're going to go out there, show we're the better striker, and duke it out with Francis Ngannou? Or are you like, did you hear what this motherfucker said about your Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt? Time for payback, Junior. Let's tap this guy out.
I mean, it's not like we've seen a ton of offensive wrestling from Junior Dos Santos, though. Like, he's just not, that's not what he does.
True, but like, if you are even familiar with the sphere of Francis Ngannou in his last handful of fights, there's a pretty glaring weakness there. Not to mention, a pretty glaring strength.
I mean, when you say a glaring weakness, what you mean is that one man has been able to expose it. And
yes,
he was the damn champion.
Stipe Miocic. I'm not saying Junior Dos Santos is going to be capable of going out there and turning out an offensive wrestling Stipe Miocic style performance. I'm just questioning whether or not that's the right path for him. Because I think if he goes out there and tries to slug it out with Francis Ngannou, honestly, I think Junior Dos Santos is probably going to get tucked in for an early evening here.
I'm not saying you want to slug it out. I'm not sure that that's what if I'm in Junior Dos Santos' camp, I'm going, all right, toe to toe. Bite down on your mouthpiece and swang them fangs, Junior. This is the kind of motivation I bring to a camp, by the way. But I think you do. I also don't think, though, that you can send him out there by being like, all right, here's what we're going to do. Keep away from this scary motherfucker until you see an opportunity to shoot for a takedown. And then that's how we're going to win this fight. We're going to put him on his back and we're going to keep him there. We're going to beat him up there. Just because if you are thinking that way, for one thing, it's going to affect your own striking game. Like if you're, you know, where do you think you're going to take Junior or Francis Ngannou down? Are you going to back him up against the fence and single leg him? You think you're going to double leg him out there in space? Because he's a big, strong dude.
Yes.
And if you try for something like that and you don't get it, and then you're stuck on the bottom and he's, you know, bam-bamming away at the side of your head with like giant Brock Lesnar style ham hock, hammer fists, that could be a bad night for you. I think that you have to go out there and think, I'm the better boxer. Like, just as a technician, I'm better. I can avoid getting hit, and I can piece him up, and let me get through that first round where he's going to throw a bunch of huge, heavy punches, and I'm going to be jabbing, sticking, and moving, floating like a goddamn butterfly with a genuine black belt. And by the second round, he'll be tired, and he'll start to slow down, and then that's when I'll start to pick him apart. I think that's probably what you're telling yourself if you're Junior Santos. And yet, yeah, there's always the chance that Francis Ngannou is going to clip you upside your head, and your face instantly grows three sizes if you're Junior Dos Santos.
Just looking at the odds, it looks like Junior Dos Santos is about a 2-1 underdog here, which is about, I guess, what I would expect. I don't know, man. I just feel like 25 minutes, and maybe Francis Ngannou is not going to be dangerous for all 25 of those minutes, but at the same time, keeping it on the feet, it's not that I think it. I know it's a dangerous game. We have seen terrible shit happened to other people that tried to do that. So I guess if you're Junior Dos Santos, you think that your more technical striking could win the day. But I don't know for sure.
You think that maybe secretly Junior Dos Santos has just been drilling single leg chain takedowns this entire camp?
Well, I mean, if you're going to go that route, you better go all the way, because we saw what happened to Cain Velasquez, right? Like, that dude got knocked. That dude went out there with the express purpose of taking Francis Ngannou down, and he still got knocked out.
And he's a better wrestler than Junior Dos Santos is.
Fair enough. Same with Curtis Blaydes, although I don't know that we ever got to that stage of Blaydes versus Ngannou. Has Francis Ngannou, in your mind, erased those back-to-back losses? He's won two fights since UFC 226 when he had the terrible performance against Derek Lewis. The Stipe Miocic UFC 220 fight, January of 2018, exposed the weaknesses in his game, I guess, but also struck us as like maybe a singularly bad matchup of styles for Francis Ngannou. So as we approach this Junior Dos Santos fight, how back on the bandwagon are you? Are you like, hell yes, give me that Francis Ngannou? Or are you a little bit still like, I don't know, man, let's see what this guy has?
I'm somewhere in the middle between those two, but like you said, if he were up against somebody like a big heavyweight with a good wrestling background, then I'd be like, okay, we're going to find out. That's kind of how I felt about the Cain Velasquez fight, except that, you know, Cain Velasquez also always drags a lot of other baggage around just because of how the injuries and all the time off and everything for him, that's always a question too. But with something like this fight, because of the way the matchup looks, at least on paper, it seems to me like this seems like we're poised to end up with another highlight reel knockout for Francis Ngannou that just vaults him right back into that title talk.
Yeah, and a win over Junior Dos Santos would be significant.
Right.
That's a pretty big deal for him.
But then, okay, imagine Francis Ngannou goes out there and just knocks Junior Dos Santos' head off on ESPN in the main event. And again, everybody's getting really excited. Everybody loves that one-punch power, you know, big, scary heavyweight and with a good backstory. You know, like a good story that you can really sell on pay-per-view. And say Daniel Cormier beats Stipe in the rematch, and he's like, okay, I'll stick around for one more. And then you got Francis Ngannou versus Daniel Cormier. Doesn't it seem like you just ended up again with that same kind of matchup that's bad for Francis Ngannou?
It does. I guess if you're the UFC and you think you can sell the shit out of that fight, maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, if you are really in the Francis Ngannou corner here, if you're in the Francis Ngannou futures business, maybe the best thing is if DC beats Stipe Miocic and then retires, and then you have a vacant title, and Miocic coming off a loss isn't the guy you want to put in the vacant title fight, then you can do Ngannou against somebody else.
But who?
I don't know. Maybe a fella by the name of Jonathan Dwight Jones? What do you think about that?
Well,
you would
shit.
Watch that.
I would watch the hell out of that, man.
You would watch the shit out of it.
Don't schedule any kind of social event on that day, because I'm not coming.
No, you're not. You're at home in front of the television. Hell, man, you'll stay home to watch BKFC.
I will. I absolutely will.
You'll watch damn near anything they
fucking
put out
degenerate.
There. All right, let's do Just Saying Stuff, Ben, and then we'll get out of here for this week. Ben, did you see Eric Spicely's tweet from after his fight with Daron Wynn?
I did not.
The curtain jerker? My bank account was negative $230.
How did they let you get to that point?
I'm fucking juiced right now. # fight of the night. I guess I'm just saying, man, really? We are still at this point where this dude is going to go out there and have the fight of the night at the UFC. And he's going to roll in there with negative $230 in his bank account. First of all, I would suggest some overdraft protection. Second of all, man, like, that just shouldn't be. You shouldn't be at that level of the game and have -$230.
He was fighting on ESPN, yep, the worldwide leader in sports.
Yep, -$230. Maybe, and like, suffice to say, we don't know anything about Eric Spicely's management of his funds there, but at the same time, I would hope he's doing a little better than that.
Yeah.
And the extent to how juiced he is about the extra 50 G's, I think, tells us what the problem was headed in.
Do you think maybe this enthusiasm might lead to some money management problems?
Oh, I know. I hope he does okay.
Yeah.
I hope he does okay. Puts it in the bank.
Gets that overdraft.
Gets overdraft protection, yeah, and spaces it out till the next one.
Mm-hmm. Think about taxes. Chad, this week, I'm just saying. So, remember when all this stuff happened with Paulie Malignaggi and Conor McGregor and the sparring footage and everything, and, you know, we saw all these clips and Paulie was telling us how they were edited and it wasn't what it seems like, and they just went out of their way to make him look bad and make it look way worse than it actually was, and we were like, okay, that sounds kind of believable. That does sound like something they would do in order to help sell this Floyd Mayweather fight, convince us that Conor McGregor is a legit boxer. Paulie's probably telling some version of the truth here. And then he goes out there against Artem Lobov, not happy with the decision, and he's got that gall to stand there with his face looking like he just stuck it into a box fan and tell us that he only got hit with one clean punch. And afterwards continues at the press conference talking about what a terrible decision was and how he just really barely even got touched in this fight, all while we can see into the meat of his face. I'm just saying, picture is starting to emerge of the particular kind of guy that Paulie Malignaggi is. I feel like maybe Paulie Malignaggi is the kind of guy who could, you know, go up to a woman at a bar, ask her out, get denied, and then come back telling his friends that, you know, she was stupid and ugly up front and he wasn't interested anyway. You know? You know, you thought you saw him just get rejected out there, but no, that wasn't actually what you saw. What you saw was him rejecting her. That's right. That's it. He rejected her. He decided she wasn't good enough for him. And he's going to stand there, look you right in the eye, and expect you to believe that shit. And I'm just saying, I think we've developed a little bit of a personality profile. Maybe that sparring match really did go the way it looked. Just saying.
Just saying. Well, that's going to do it for this week's Co-Main Event podcast. Ben will be on the road the rest of the week. We'll try to turn out a Patreon Power Hour on Friday, depending on the kind of internet connection he can get himself into. But we will be back next week to break down all the stuff that happens at this UFC on ESPN card. And then we will start probably to look ahead to UFC 239, July 6th from T-Mobile Arena, John Jones versus Thiago Santos and Amanda Nunes versus Holly Holm. So some good stuff there. As of right now, though, we are done. We are through. We are out.
So maybe what I do is I roll up to the library, got my microphone.
Uh-huh.
I slip him a koozie.
Yeah, there you go.
Come in at that koozie and be like, put me in your finest private room.
Yeah, yeah. They'll look at you and be like, this guy, he's here for the internet porns.
He must be a serious podcaster.
That's right.
We'll have to station a guard outside the door.
Well, you'll be wearing a tuxedo, I imagine, yes, at the time. Yeah. So they will know that you're a serious
I will be wearing
podcaster.
A tuxedo and a crown, a jeweled crown.
Now we're starting to get into Henry Cejudo territory. Maybe a medal. Maybe hang a medal around your neck.
Why stop at one?
There you go. Grip a medal.
Champ.